from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well on this Tuesday. Started out as a pretty overcast type day, but it's pretty pleasant out there, so enjoyed. I think we got a little rain coming sometime before the end of the weekend. Hopefully it's not around baseball, because we're just 3 days away from baseball, but we are just less than 2 hours away from tip for a very important basketball game over at Neville Arena, as Auburn hosts the 19th-ranked Vanderbilt Commodores, coming in off a shocking home loss to the Oklahoma Sooners over the weekend.
Hey Bill, and I would say, considering that Auburn's playing the Commodores, you would hope that the three-point shooting is not
a brick house.
Oh,
there we go. You would hope Auburn... I was going to say, not easy either.
Yeah. No, for
like Sunday morning.
How about this? You would hope for Vanderbilt's offense, it's not easy.
Yeah, you're right.
And you would hope for Auburn's offense, it's not a brick house.
Yeah,
because that's, I mean, I think that my concern would be, and we'll see
Still,
how much.
Still, I'm trying to think of Commodore songs now.
Yeah, so. Well. It is. It's the basket Auburn is looking for. It's a little Lionel Richie. I think that. My concern over these next two games is, and I know more of the problem is defense. Like, Stephen Pearl's the first one who's going to tell you, like, Auburn scoring should have been enough in several of their SEC losses. The fourth quarter was sort of a difficult stretch for Auburn on both sides, mm-hmm. You know, on both ends of the floor. And I just wonder if teams are going to pack the paint and dare Auburn to win with the jump shot. And is
can't
Auburn
imagine why they wouldn't.
Exactly. And can Auburn, you know, is Auburn prepared to, like, is and it's a tough call, because it's like, do you, I mean, you still want to give your bigs paint touches, even if the defense is mm-hmm. prepared for it, because you trust that Keyshawn and Sebastian, and both Keyshawns and
right.
Sebastian
and Phillip
and Jovich can all mm-hmm. can all win when they get the ball around the basket. But I think, yeah, defenses are sort of leaning on that as something they have to stop, and I wonder how, you know, that's gonna be a challenge for Auburn's offense tonight. It's probably gonna be a challenge for unless the 3-point shot becomes more consistent, it's gonna be a problem for Auburn's offense the rest of the year.
Oh yeah, absolutely. They're gonna have to prove that they can make those shots to be able to, I would think, loosen things back up inside.
You called the game important. Like, what makes the game
it's
seem
close to critical? I mean, it's a home game. You're 5-5 in conference right now, and you are in the you're 10th or so in the SEC, 10th or 11th in the SEC.
Most bracketologists have you on the 8-9 line right now.
Yeah, and still most everyone feels like Auburn is in. But as we were talking yesterday, lose the next two, and then you wonder what the mindset, the mm-hmm. psyche of the team is. And everybody in this league, Oklahoma showed it with that win in Nashville, that if you're not ready, you can lose. And Auburn could win any of the ball games they have left. They could lose any of the games they have left. But if they lose this one and then they go to Fayetteville on Saturday, that's going to be very, very difficult there. You just worry about a team that has a 4-game losing streak heading into the final third of its conference schedule.
And it's still an Auburn team that looks at several of its SEC losses as games. It's like, oh, well we almost did enough
That's
to
right.
win. And you're still talking about a team that has beaten Florida and St. John's and NC State. I mean, there are some really good-looking wins. Arkansas. Like, there are some good-looking wins for this Auburn team, too. You want to reverse the momentum of these last couple of games, especially considering the way that the Alabama game played out, with a week to prepare for Alabama and the extra rest compared to them. You want to uh, You know, I think that they're hopeful, and Vanderbilt's going to be a very, I mean, they ask you to do a lot of the same things defensively that Alabama challenges you with, and you pointed it out yesterday, Bill. Alabama scored 70 points in the last 22 minutes of the game on Saturday, and Vanderbilt's got that kind of firepower.
Vandy scored 57 in the second half the other day against Oklahoma in that loss.
Even without,
they scored 57 in the second half.
Even without Duke Miles, and it's unfortunate that the 3-3-4 guard is out in his senior year after starting. Well, he played at Troy, played at High Point, played at Oklahoma. Now he's at Vanderbilt, was having a very strong start to the year.
He really was. I mean, he was averaging 16 points, three assists, a couple of steals a game.
He's missed most of the I think he missed pretty much all of January after a knee injury late in December that requires surgery. He's not going to play tonight, and we'll see if he can come back at any point in the season. But even without him, like they've got firepower. Tyler Tanner is putting together an SEC conference.
He's definitely in the conversation for player of the year,
conference player of the year type season. Like he's having that kind of year at guard. Just a huge leap from year one to year two. He wasn't really in the first team conversation in the preseason.
No.
I mean, he'd been a good player, but I mean, people were talking about those Florida front court pieces and Josh Hubbard and Filon and Pettiford, and you know there were more obvious Otega Owe. Like there were more, you know, there were bigger names out there in the preseason. But Tanner has just been electric, even in a couple of Vanderbilt's losses, but especially in their wins. Like he's. He's in the front line of point guards in the SEC and probably in the conversation among the, you know, he's in the top tier of the point guards in college basketball, and that's a real challenge for an Auburn team that struggled to stop Alabama at the perimeter on Saturday.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be a huge challenge for the Tigers tonight. 6 o'clock tip, 5:30 airtime over on Wings 94.3. Dan and I planning on making our way over after the show.
Yeah, I'm gonna go check out the. I did realize, Bill, that like in my attempt to dress for neutral colors for the.
You wore black and gold.
Yeah, I know. I did find myself like in my attempt.
It's not quite gold. It's like black and tan. Sure, sort of copper.
Yeah, yeah, black and tan. But it's no in my, you know, because we did do a little bit of media work earlier today at the football complex and got to have some great conversations with some of the various coaches. But no, I'm looking gotta drop you off, run an errand, and maybe change into something more game neutral.
I had a black shirt that I had on first, and my wife pointed it out, said you're wearing black tonight. And I went, oh, that's right. So I changed into a blue.
How about this? Really interested in the guard rotation. I keep beating the drum that, and look, I don't. It doesn't need to be in the last 5 minutes of the game.
No, look, Stephen Pearl and Stephen Pearl gets it. I mean, it's not that he doesn't understand. He said 2 weeks ago that the preferred number of minutes, what the optimal number of minutes for Tahad would be between 32 and 34, and instead he's playing between 36 and 38.
Do you get the sense Magwood isn't coming back?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Just sort of like.
Do you get the sense that he is?
Okay.
I mean,
now, how about this?
I've had no inclination. From no hint from anywhere that we're going to see him.
How about
again.
This? And this is not based on any insider conversations.
No, it isn't.
This is not based on anything we know. This is based on you watch the games, Bill, right? And you go to the press conferences.
And I listen to Steven talk about the rotation and possibilities. And it's as if that's no longer a possibility.
It started as disciplinary because remember,
right?
Like. Magwood was starting when Tahad was in hot water.
Wasn't meeting Auburn standards.
Well
right?
Remember when Tahad was in hot water, and Magwood got starts.
Yes, he sure did.
Late in
started two or three straight games.
Late in 2025, and then Tahad came back, and then you started not seeing Magwood in the rotation at all. And Steven was talking about meeting standards and the problem with lateness on the team and stuff like that, and then. At some point, it turned into Magwood has volunteered himself for the scout team, or Magwood's defensive performance isn't up to the standard. But yeah, no, you get the sense that I'm not. When I'm talking about expanding the guard rotation, it's more. Let's. Although Stevens also talking about not having a timetable for Bashir, right? Like it's still. Right.
He at least says, you know, that he's still rehabbing his back, that he's not ready.
Yeah, but no timetable in the second week of February for a college basketball player.
I mean,
player.
That one just feels like a red shirt, doesn't it? I mean, it just feels like sure. this is going to be a red shirt.
If you can get, I forget how many games he played or if he qualifies for however things work.
I think if you played in less than 25% of your team's games in the first third of the season, you're qualified.
Yeah, and you know what? And I wonder if he's someone who like, you hate to see him have to go through any sort of injury trouble, but you wonder if he would benefit from an extra year to acclimate himself to the speed of D1 basketball, because the sense I get from Bashir, and we didn't see too much of him.
No, we didn't.
In the regular season. But we were talking about it in the preseason, Bill. He played in the Pacific Coast League, right? To pivot.
Which is like playing 7-on-7.
To play
football.
Yeah, I forget what the exact... I forget the exact league he was playing in out west, but the... You know, it was one of those leagues where like the sixth highest scoring team in the league was still breaking 100 points a game. And it was just like the sense was that it was a lot of possessions, a lot of open shots, not a ton of importance placed on the defensive end. And for a player making the jump from that to Auburn, not only do you have to deal with performing up to the defensive standards, you also have to deal with guys guarding you for the and actually, you know, stepping up.
Yeah, that's true.
Like it's something that
it works both ways.
Yeah.
If you play defense, then you're generally expecting the other side's going to.
Right. And so and I think Bashir, like I want to see what happens once he's, I think, more comfortable at the SEC level. Steven did talk about Simon Walker, right? As someone who might make some appearances tonight or Saturday.
He did bring up Simon Walker's name. So, yes, he said there was a lot of discussion as to, you know, can they work him in? Can he get some of the minutes there at the two when Kevin Overton is sliding to the point?
And do you – I mean, the value of being able to sit Tahad and Freeman at that point, what would they – I mean, who would he be if Overton's at the one and Simon's at the two, who's on the bench from the backcourt? Is that sitting Tahad and Hall? Is that sitting Tahad and Elijah?
Tahad and Elijah, probably.
Okay, well that's and sitting those two for a couple of minutes in the first half would be really valuable as far as letting them be at their, you know, at their fresher point.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, he didn't really talk
about... Overton's got to sit down at some point.
That's what I was about to say. He didn't really talk about Simon staying in while Tahad's in. But I think the biggest concern right now is getting some time, taking some of the minutes away from Tahad having to play so many.
Do you have enough on-ball defense with Tahad at the one and Walker at the two?
That's a good question.
I think that may depend
on the matchups, and you would think tonight would not be one of those times.
No, Tyler Tanner?
Yeah.
No, would be no. I would say this is a big night for Kevin Overton.
Yes, right? It is.
I mean, Tahad's going to be asked to give it his all defensively too, but this feels like a big night for Kevin Overton to be the tip of the spear defensively, and a guy who can really provide that tough on-ball defense on a guy that we were just talking about is on the short list of the best point guards in college basketball. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was just looking back at Abdul Bashir. The last time he appeared was Thanksgiving week against Michigan.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, that was the last game he appeared in. He's been in six ball games, and he should qualify for a redshirt if he doesn't play.
I was at Auburn, Michigan in Vegas, and I remember turning to Ferguson during that game and pointing out that Steven was absolutely lighting into Bashir after a defensive possession. And the fact that I mean the Bashir back injury stuff is real too.
He played less than a minute.
Yeah, and he wasn't in uniform
in the Michigan game.
Wasn't in uniform, for a big chunk of the season. But no, I wouldn't give up on Bashir. Does feel like maybe not. It's reinserting him into the rotation this year feels like a bit of a long shot.
Yeah, it does.
I don't know what sort of appetite there is for a big. I mean, unless Michalik's performance were to change. I think that maybe he could vie for some of those minutes, but it feels like he's been given an opportunity to play his way into more minutes these last couple of games, and felt like maybe what you heard yesterday from Steven was a pivot.
Yeah.
From that strategy.
Absolutely felt like that was.
Sure. And so you run, like, if Bashir's
got
injured,
to have another option for your, you know, there in at the one or two.
So you feel like it's a big opportunity for Simon Walker because
indeed.
You know, if Michalik's sort of played his way out of these minutes and Bashir's still trying to recover and feels like a red shirt, and we both started this conversation by saying feels like Magwood is not an option, like, to put it simply.
Look at the roster. I mean, that's it for your options.
That sure feels like if Simon Walker, and he can still, and I'll tell you what else, for a team that's struggling from the 3-point line.
Oh, he can light it up. We saw that in his collegiate debut.
If they're gonna, you know, and again, you know, we'll see, but I think that would be a really, not because I think Simon Walker is some sort of huge impact player himself, although you never know with that 3-point shot, you know, what he could do if he gets some run. But the value of being able to sit Tahad and Overton and Freeman for any period of time in the first 25, 30 minutes of the game feels like it could be really important as this team gets ready to play important games down the stretch. Close important games down the stretch.
Yeah, no question about it. All right, we're just underway here on the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. You know, we normally talk to Andy Burcham, voice of the Tigers, here in this portion of the show. But this is right when Andy is interviewing Stephen Pearl for the pregame for tonight's broadcast. So we'll get Andy back.
We have breaking news.
Oh, I haven't seen.
Andy Burcham can be on the phone if we go to break right now and call
him. Let's go to break right now. That's what I was saying. We usually have him now. I guess he's done with Steven. We will we'll talk to the voice of the Tigers when we come back. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls. And, you know, right after I was saying, well, we normally talk to Andy Burcham, let's get back to normal, if you will, and welcome in the voice of the Tigers, who I guess has wrapped up some of his pregame work and giving us a few minutes before the Tigers and the Commodores get things underway in about an hour and a half over at Neville Arena. Andy Burcham joining us here on the Tuesday Drive for a few minutes. Andy, how you doing?
We'll be with you tonight starting at 5:30 over on Wings 94.3.
Yep, looking forward to that. And this is a very important ball game. Auburn, right now trying to snap that two-game skid before they head on the road to Arkansas. We knew this was a very tough gauntlet that Auburn faced. But, man, after that tough one, quick turnaround for a very dangerous Vandy team that I'm sure they're smarting as well, losing that ball game to Oklahoma, a game in which they fought all the way, you know, almost all the way back from a 21-point deficit down the stretch just to lose by one.
Yeah, they had a shot. They actually had a shot to win that ball game late, which is remarkable because they trailed by 20 in the last 5 minutes, and then Tyler Tanner just went off. He scored 15 of his career-high 37 in the last 2 minutes of the game and gave them an incredible opportunity to win a game in which Vanderbilt had trailed by as many as 21 points. So we know this team can score. Started the year 16-0, outstanding at the guards, especially Tanner and Nickel, or as good a twosome as shooting guards that Auburn has faced this season. And I know I'm saying that after Auburn faced LeBaron Filon and Aiden Holloway last week, but Tanner is just a premier point guard at 6 foot and is outstanding defensively as well. And there's not a better 3-point shooter in the SEC, and he's one of the very best in the country in Tyler Nickel, who has 77 threes, which leads the Southeastern Conference. He's shooting 45% from 3-point land. You leave that guy alone, he can beat you. And Auburn has to find out, has to know where number 3 is, and number five is at all time tonight.
Yeah, and the on the other side, I mean, that has been a big problem for Auburn. Auburn allowing opponents in conference play to shoot 39% threes, and Stephen was talking about that just yesterday about, you know, breaking down every three that has been taken against the Tigers, trying to see is there a pattern, because, you know, you hit the point when you played 10 conference games. You can't just keep saying, man, they're making some tough shots.
And that's what Stephen Pearl said yesterday when he met with the media. And I think that's what spurred that, is that so many teams are hitting a lot of really good shots. So I think it's more than just, wow, they're having a good night against mm-hmm. Auburn. And I think that, you know, listen, I mean, that's his background. I mean, defense, he was the defensive coordinator under his father. He is still the defensive coordinator of this basketball team. I think he takes it to heart, and it'll be interesting to see how they approach it tonight against this really good Vanderbilt ball club that comes in 19-4, 6-4 in the SEC, a game ahead of Auburn in the standings and ranked as high as number 19 in the country.
Yeah, and on the other side for Auburn, you know, we've seen a couple of games now where even though Auburn has been able to win, against some quality opponents in the conference, it's, you know, 3-point shooting has been inconsistent for Auburn, and you wonder how many teams are going to sort of dare Auburn to win that way and make it difficult for Auburn's bigs to get paint touches. You know, I think back to the approach Auburn employed against Florida. Right, sort of making it turn into a jump shooting contest. I wonder if until Auburn can find consistency from the outside, however they need to, I wonder if teams are going to try to use that playbook against Auburn's offense.
Well, Auburn's not going to outshoot Vanderbilt tonight from three. That's not going to happen. Vanderbilt's much better of a 3-point shooter as a team than Auburn. And, you know, when Auburn is at best, it is a three-level score. And you talk about that Florida game, and Auburn got off to a fabulous start everywhere. But down the stretch of that game, after Florida tied the game just under 8 minutes to go, Auburn didn't win that game because of its three-point shooting the rest of the way. It won that game because of its defense and because it was getting to the free throw line. And you're not gonna get to the free throw line by just shooting threes. Auburn has to be able to get contact. Keyshawn Hall has to continue to do what he has done getting the line, but he can't be the only guy getting to the free throw line. And when Auburn gets there, they've got to make the free throws, which for the most part they've done this year. But this is not an Auburn team that's going to go out and just shoot lights out from three and beat teams like Vanderbilt, unless it's just a very, very unusual night.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that was surprising the other day against Alabama, is that Auburn took more threes and wasn't able to get to the free throw line more because they weren't attacking. And I do think that the fact that Charles Bediako was in there had something to do with that.
Well, it's the second straight game that Stephen Pearl was not pleased with the frequency mm-hmm. of his team's 3-point shooting. It happened at Tennessee as well. And Auburn had better opportunities to shoot than shoot threes. Auburn had, I think, 31 threes in that loss at Tennessee. And this is just not, Jared Harper and Bryce Brown shooting the threes for this Auburn ball club right now. And in spite of the fact that Tahad Pettifer probably had his best home SEC game
right.
with 25 points and 7 assists. And that needs to continue, by the way. That can't be just a one-off, especially for SEC home games. Auburn has been best this season when it has been getting the ball in the paint and beating teams in the paint. And in doing that, going to the free throw line. And that happened at Florida, for example. Mm-hmm. And that needs to continue, and it needs to start tonight against this Vanderbilt ball club.
Going to be really interesting, Andy, to see if we do see Simon Walker how many minutes
you
he
will.
Can get.
Well, and I think as a reason, I think this, you'll see a combination of things. You'll see Kevin Overton continue to run point guard for Auburn. He will be the backup point tonight. And as a result, I think when Overton is in, perhaps maybe that first time that Kevin moves to the point, I think that's when you see Simon Walker come in, give Tahad a rest, and put Simon Walker out at the two. for the Tigers. I think you'll see at least one rotation with Simon and perhaps more with Kevin Overton running the point tonight. So I think that's pretty certain that we're gonna see that combination out there tonight.
Yeah, that I mean, just as you play more and more games, the grind of the season on seven guys that are playing all the minutes, anything you can get to try to keep them fresh is critical.
And it might, you know, there may not be a pattern here, Andy, but I've isolating a couple of SEC games, that big A&M run where they scored 40 points in 10 minutes, that came in the second half and involved shooting a lot of three-pointers. Alabama, as Bill pointed out yesterday, Alabama scored 70 points in the last 22 minutes on Saturday. Florida's big rally in the second half came, they came all the way back from down 18, even though Auburn won that game. I see the value in, if Simon Walker can hold the rope, I see the value in getting him some run in the first half, just so you can have players like Tahad and Overton and Freeman as fresh as possible in the last 10 minutes in the second half of some of these close games.
I don't think they want Simon Walker in there. He has potential to be, an outstanding outside shooter for Auburn. I mean, that's his game. So I think it's a twofold deal. I think they want to give Simon another chance to be in the rotation. I think that could be very valuable for Auburn if he can stick in a rotation or two or more, perhaps in a ball game. But he's got to be able to play the defensive side. And if you heard from the head coach on right after that game on Saturday that, in addition to perhaps too many threes and not going to the free throw line enough in that game, it was the defense. Especially in the second half against Alabama. And it was the guys that were Auburn's leading scorers in that game. So for Tahad Pettiford and Keyshawn Hall, I mean, they've got to step it up at both ends of the floor. It can't just be the offensive show of Hod and Key tonight. They've got to be able to be a factor in a positive way for Auburn at the defensive end.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Auburn can't have to be scoring 90-plus points to win ball games.
No, that's not what this team is. I think we found out when this team is playing its best, you're maybe getting into the 80s, but you're doing a really good job of taking away the other team's best threat. And tonight, that is Tyler Tanner and Tyler Nichols. They're just outstanding shooters. And Tanner is a guy that can also get the ball to the rim, and he's shooting 85%. This team this Vandy as a squad is shooting almost 78% from the free throw line. So it's not just trying to get out and guard Tanner and Nichol. You also don't want to be fouling these guys because they will beat you at the free throw line as well.
Tuesday night, 6 o'clock, 5:30 is the airtime over on Wings 94.3, the start of a busy, busy week, Andy.
Do we have time for a little baseball chat?
That's where I was trying to sort of lead into. Yeah. It's that's what we've got coming up this weekend, and folks are really excited about it.
Friday at 5:30, Saturday at 6, and Sunday afternoon at 2, Auburn and Youngstown State at Plainsman Park. All the coverage begins Friday evening at 5:15. Brad will work with John Cohen for the opener on Friday. Jason Caldwell fills in on Saturday, hopefully, so that game is not affected by weather, and I'll be back in the booth with Brad on Sunday over on Wings 94.3. Don't forget, we've got Tiger Talk Thursday night out of Baumhauer's Victory Grill. We will have Stephen Pearl, Larry Vickers, and Carl Nunnemaker will join us Thursday night. So we'll talk some baseball on Tiger Talk Thursday night. No midweek game for Auburn women's basketball. They're back in action on Sunday for the Tigers right here on ESPN 106.7.
Yeah, so a busy, busy week. Andy, really appreciate you spending a little bit of time with us here. Have a great broadcast tonight.
My pleasure, guys. Have a great day. War Eagle!
Voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, joining us from Neville Arena as they're getting prepared. I mean, the doors will be opening here. As a matter of fact, I think the students are probably making their way in right now with a 6 o'clock tip.
Wouldn't be shocked to see some of the early bird beat writers already on the scene since they were on campus
That's
earlier
right.
today anyway. So, yeah, I think should be a good one tonight. You've gotten used to some of these 8 o'clock starts, right? So mm-hmm. a 6 o'clock home weeknight.
This is better, although they don't hold it up for us. We'll be in there, I would guess, around midway through the first half. But looking forward to it. We'd love to hear from you. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. We'll talk a little football as well. As you mentioned, Dan, a lot of the media was on campus because today we had a chance to meet the offensive assistant coaches. Tomorrow will be the defensive coaches. We can talk about what some of those guys had to say. Love to hear from you, though. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar, as we continue with the Tuesday Drive.
U.com. To be a part of the Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio with Drew at the controls. Love for you. Anything on your mind sports-wise? Mentioned we were over at the football complex earlier today as we had a chance to get with the Auburn offensive and assistant coaches and special teams. I got to hear Tyler Hodanik. And we both heard a little of Larry Porter. You were there with Cody Burns for a while.
Yeah, Jason just Caldwell, who should be in the house tomorrow.
Yeah.
Jason and I got to sit with Cody Burns for a long time and ask him about a variety of topics, not just sort of his range of experience, but you know, I thought he talked a lot about what the new receivers bring to the table, you know, sort of one by one, and then talked about the familiarity and why that is a benefit not just to Byram but also to these receivers, you know, even though he points out that it's more beneficial to a quarterback in his experience to know exactly where the receivers are going to be. With receivers, it's sort of you need to be where you need to be.
Yeah, but it's beneficial to both. To have that relationship and the chemistry is already there.
Yes, and he makes that point too. And then we chatted a little bit about Gus Malzahn's retirement, and he gives a long answer about how important Gus Malzahn has been to his life and his career, and to Auburn as someone who has has some skin in the game, right? When you talk about Auburn football, right?
Yeah,
Cody
I
Burns
would say.
As a player and a coach,
he's got that championship ring.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, his opinion matters on this, but yeah, no, always great to catch up with Cody. Thrilled that he's back. And yeah, just someone who is a tremendous ambassador for this new staff. Is someone who is well liked, you know, from a variety of standpoints, from his time, you know, admired for his time as a player, but also has done a great job as a coach, and is just an all around pretty good dude. So it was great to hear from him, and then Larry Porter, who has this really interesting room, right? I mean,
he really does. I mean, you know, not only do you return Jeremiah, but I mean, you've got three other proven running backs now that have been added. Yeah. I mean, I think some folks were surprised, but look, in this age of college football, you know, you're just not going to see those workhorse backs that get 30 plus carries a game. They don't want that. And you want to have a fresh guy out there. Auburn has different backs who have little different styles, different ways that you can attack defenses and can use these guys. And Larry, of course, is your second sort of a bridge or connection with Auburn, having been here and coming back to Auburn. He talked about that a little bit at the beginning about being back and it being an easier transition for him because he's been here and because he knows some of the other guys that he's going to be working with. But Cody, I mean, Cody really is that bridge to Auburn. I mean, he's every coach that we have talked to who has been with Cody at South Florida. I mean, Joel Gordon talked about it. Alex Golish obviously did at his opening press conference. Joel Gordon did. Todd Hudanik did today. Just talked about how much they had heard about Auburn from Cody Burns, how much he loved it, and how a special a play made it. Hudanik, you know, he made it much easier for all of them. They were all really looking forward to seeing this place that Cody Burns had just talked so glowingly about while they were spending time at South Florida.
Do you want to run? Drew's got Cody.
That'd be great.
Let's run the Cody thing.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're coming up on break. Let's go ahead and get the break. We'll get to our final break here of hour number one. Then we'll let you hear some of Cody Burns as he spoke with Dan and Jason a little earlier today. So we're right back here on the Tuesday Drive.
War Eagle, this is Coach Larry Vickers, and you're listening to ESPN 106.7.
And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive, final segment of hour number one. And while we've got an opportunity, let's let you hear some of the comments from former Auburn quarterback and wide receiver, and now the wide receivers coach for Auburn under Alex Golish, as we had a chance to hear from Auburn offensive assistants today and hear some comments from Cody as Dan and Jason Caldwell, I believe, are going to be doing the questions.
Man, just these guys know the system, ultra competitive. And then also guys that have been proven, right? Like, we open up, you play Boise, number 25 in the country, and then have two guys that essentially go for 100 yards. You know, you play Florida in the swamp at USF, really good defense. Obviously struggled a little bit offensively last year, but defensively a real team. And you go in there and you win in the swamp, which is hard to do. And then you play Miami, you got a guy that goes for close to 140 yards, and Chaz and Keyshawn that went, you know, close to 100 as well. So you have guys that are proven at this level. I don't care how you slice it. And that's the one thing about the country and as far as playing football, I don't care what level you're playing at, everybody has really good skill players. The difference in that league and the SEC is the O-line, D-line. It's just a different ball game. But there's a ton of good skill players, man. Dating back to when I was at MTSU, I had NFL guys. When I was at Arkansas State, I had NFL guys. So anywhere you go, there's going to be really talented skill players. And as long as those guys translate into what you do and fit the specs and the mode of what you want to do, you're going to be fine. So, again, obviously rebuilt. There were some talented guys in the room, a couple guys last year that chose to do something else, and that's what college football is right now. And what you have to do is you have to adjust, right? You got to adapt. And what we did is we brought guys in that we feel like can go out there and get it done.
Sorry if you already asked this, but what's the value of familiarity between a quarterback and his wide receivers? If someone like Byron Brown is trying to make the jump to the SEC to have a bunch of guys that he's played with already in his career?
Yeah, from a quarterback perspective, you know, you always preach timing, precision, and accuracy, and a quarterback has to be comfortable with who he's throwing the ball to. And so you can really accelerate that process when you have familiarity with the guys that you're throwing to. So there's a couple guys that have played a ton of ball last year with Byron Brown that he feels really comfortable with, that you can really close your eyes as a quarterback and know this is where he's going to be at. And that gives you confidence, right? And you don't have to spend time figuring things out in a game, in the season. Like, it's already been proven. He already knows what it is. And so I think that's the biggest key, is just everybody being on the same page. And you don't have to figure out who you are as a team throughout the course of the first couple games to figure it out. So
it feels like that would be beneficial to receivers making the jump to the SEC too, the fact that they have a quarterback that they just spent at least one season playing with.
Yeah, look, I think I play quarterback. Like, quarterback is the hardest position to play in all the sports, I think. And so as a receiver, like, our job is to be where we're supposed to be for the quarterback, right? And so definitely helps for the wideouts, but more so it helps the quarterback being comfortable with the guys he's throwing to.
you mentioned, I mean, Keyshawn's got a lot of pub. Coker's got a lot of pub. Chaz is a guy that people seem to have overlooked a little bit. You mentioned him. What does he bring to the table for you guys?
Man, Chaz is uber explosive. I signed Chaz out of high school at Tennessee, and he played quite a bit of ball in the SEC and has been proven. And he's explosive. He's really, really talented. And again, he got overlooked because when you look at last year, he's a guy going into the season, and really the first few games was kind of the guy. And then he ended up getting a lower body injury, and so he missed a lot of time. But he was on track to go for close to about 1,200 yards. So just who he is as a person, he's really, really smart. He's dynamic. And he's one of the more explosive players I've ever been around. Like, he can really run, and he's a good player.
When you look at some of the former Auburn players who like came back with you guys, like Bryce King, Sam Turner, what are your plans for them and your goals to see them doing this spring?
Yeah, you really want to see those guys continue to grow and develop, right? Bryce did a ton of special teams, didn't necessarily take a ton of snaps at receiver. And then Sam is a young player as well that really redshirted. And those guys have a chance to be in an offense where we're uber explosive, that they'll get exposure to things they've never seen and really done before. So I'm just excited to work with them on a day in and day out basis to where they can truly grow and develop as wideouts. And that's the key, man. As hard as college football is and a ton of transfers and guys leaving them, you still have to develop players, right? That's our job, is to get the best out of the guys that you have. And so I'm excited to get a chance to work with both those players.
Cody, you guys come in and know you got to sign some high school kids too. And go grab a few guys late. Just talk about the additions you made and maybe what fans might see out of those guys.
Yeah, so really dating back to the last place I was at USF, there's guys that we were really high on, and you kind of call them out of reach that, man, they're probably going to be bigger than where we were at the time. And so been a blessing to be able to get those guys here. And number one, Deshaun Spencer, who I was big on, man. I thought he was always one of the better slots in the country, and had an authentic relationship with him and his whole family. And we thought we had a real chance, and we honestly did at the end at USF. And obviously, just the timing of everything, that where we get the job the Sunday right before signing day, and then he's here, and it makes sense, right? Because he wanted to be in the system that we run in this offense, but it's obviously hard to turn down the SEC. So, super excited to be able to work with him. Uber talented, comes from an incredible program at Saraland, just put players out. And man, long time ago, we had Bayless Jones, right, at Tennessee, who I coached for a year and went third round. And they're all kind of that same mode, and they got the other kid that came out of there as well. So, super, super talented and super excited to work with him. Then you got big Brian Williams, right? A kid that is really, really talented. Played at a real program at TFA where they're playing national games. So he's had that exposure to some of the best players in the country. And you talk about size, you talk about the ability to bend and move, and he looks like a slot when he runs routes. And so I'm expecting a lot, you know, from him as far as developing really, really quick with his size, his body control. And really, for a quarterback, the bigger guys, like the catch radius is really what stands out to me. And so he's really smart, uber talented, excited to work with him. And then you got the Brady Marchese, right? So just how everything works, just worked out that, you know, he gets out of his deal at Michigan. He's able to come here and be an Auburn Tiger. Uber excited. He's another guy that I was on pretty early at the other place. And it got to a point, like, coach, like, we love you, but, man, like, we got some other stuff out there that's a little bit bigger. So, again, he's got a chance to be a really good player. He's talented. He can really, really run. He's tough. He's gritty. He's kind of that old-school receiver that you like. So I'm excited to get a chance to work with him as well.
Cody Burns, some of the comments there, talking a lot about the newcomers there.
Yeah, we've got time constraints because the music's about to run. I was about to ask him about Gus Malzahn, and I really hope
if you
want to
run that, we could run that a little later on.
Yeah, let's if we have time, you know, I'd love to run his answer about Gus, because I think people would really get a kick out of it.
Yeah, no question. All right, we're coming up on the end of hour number one. Again, our thanks to Andy Burcham for joining us over at Neville Arena. Auburn and Vandy, just over an hour away. We've got one more hour to go here on the Tuesday Drive. We'll have Jake Crane joining us at the bottom of the hour. And love for you to join in as well. Give us a call on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390. We're back with hour number two of the Tuesday Drive.
Capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in, hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls. We had Andy Burcham, voice of the Auburn Tigers, on with us in hour number one, previewing tonight's matchup, less than an hour away from Auburn and Vanderbilt. Very important ball game. Well, actually for both teams, but I mean, really for Auburn on a two-game losing streak, now 5-5. In conference play. Vandy is 6-4, 19-4 overall as they come in, coming off it was just a shocking loss at home to the Oklahoma Sooners. Oklahoma had only won one conference game.
Nine straight losses.
Right. They won their first game, won their first conference game, lost nine straight, went into Nashville and built a 21-point lead, still had a 20-point lead with 5 minutes to go in the ballgame, held off a furious Vandy rally down the stretch, led by their outstanding point guard, Taylor, who scored 37 points.
Well, Vandy's a team that I feel like it makes sense that they're going to be really hot and really cold, because they shoot as many jump shots as anybody in the league. And if you play basketball that way, you could – if you play basketball that way, you can have a team solidly in last place in the SEC, like Oklahoma, come to your gym and build a 20-point lead because your jump shots aren't falling. And if they manufacture enough offense, you know, that's – I mean, you think back to Auburn. Auburn took a jump shot-heavy approach – in the first half against Tennessee. And Tennessee wasn't even playing all that well, Bill. And they were up 16, right? Auburn fought back. But, like, when Tennessee had that 16-point lead, Steven made this point, I think it's not, you know, a postgame, where it's like Tennessee was up 16, and it wasn't as though Tennessee had found a rhythm either.
No, you're right.
But they'd still built a 16-point lead because Auburn was that cold offensively. And for Vanderbilt, they were so cold against Oklahoma that – an Oklahoma team that had really struggled to be competitive in the SEC this year wasn't just winning. Like, they were winning in every aspect of the game until Vanderbilt turned around. And then Vandy scores 40 points in the final 10 minutes.
Yeah, something Auburn can relate to, sort of what Alabama did to Auburn in the second half. But Tyler Tanner, I didn't realize he scored 15 points in the last couple of minutes.
Yeah.
That is phenomenal.
And that's got me concerned with the way Auburn sort of closed games lately. The thought that even though it wasn't enough, I think Auburn really, like, it's this is a big challenge for anybody who has to get out on the perimeter and guard 3-point shooters. Is that Sebastian? Is that Elijah? Obviously, Tahad and Overton. Keyshawn Hall. Right, I mean, Bill, you pointed out how many times, like, it was how many times Alabama was able to move the ball and find an open shooter at the 3-point line, right?
Well,
like, that was,
yeah. I mean, when Stephen Pearl said after the game, our better players have to be better defenders, that he needs his best players to be better defenders. And that's something. I mean, and I think most
he picked Sebastian to go to the postgame press conference,
right?
And he talked about how Sebastian was the one guy he felt had gone out there on the perimeter and had competed when Alabama had the ball every single time. You had players like Tahan and Keyshawn Hall who had scored considerably more points than Sebastian on Saturday. Sebastian was the guy on the team with a positive plus-minus.
Had the most positive plus-minus. And then Steven also yesterday said, when he was asked about Sebastian, he said, that's the guy I show them I show them film and say, that's how you play defense. And Sebastian Williams-Adams as a freshman is the player that, that Stephen Pearl has the most confidence in his ability playing, you know, playing defense. But the thing is, he's not a guy that's going to be, at least for any extended period of time, handling the guards, the perimeter players. And, you know, as much as
he can step out and
guard. Well, he
can,
but, I mean, he's not a guy that you want to just put out there and say, all right, you know, Tyler Tanner, Tyler Nickel, that's who you're going to defend. And as much talk as there has been about Tyler Tanner.
Well, for a couple of reasons. Because not only because Tanner and...
You're away from the basket is another reason.
Yeah, because, I mean, not only are Tanner and Nickel outstanding offensive options in their own right. Andy just said, like, there's probably a real debate between... it's probably a real debate between Filon and Holloway versus Tanner and Nickel as far as the best backcourt duo.
Just imagine if Duke Miles was still healthy.
Yeah, and Duke Miles, who's great, but is
he was. I mean, he was off to a great start. He was averaging nearly 17 points a game, the 3 rebounds and 4.5 assists a game.
Ruled out tonight because of the knee injury he suffered late in 2025. Has not played a lot in conference play. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of DNPs in a row. So hopefully he can get back into the swing of things. But Auburn will not see Duke Miles tonight. But no, for Auburn, you have those guards to worry about for Vanderbilt, but Sebastian and Keyshawn Hall, for that matter, like, they've got to be able to hold their own against Okereke.
Devin McLaughlin is a guy that just absolutely was. Oh. Fabulous against Auburn last year.
Blew us away watching McLaughlin play against Auburn's bigs last year. And, he's got to be thinking that this is a chance. You know, now you're not dealing with Broome and Caldwell, right? So it's like, Cardwell. You're not having to deal with the bigs from Auburn's front court last year.
But, I mean, that's where Auburn has got to get back to that inside game, even though, you know, we've talked about, the book's out on Auburn, you know, pack it in as much as you can, try to see if you can get them settling for jump shots. Vandy is slightly out-rebounding its opponents. This is a game that Auburn, you know, is not going to be, they're not going to be outsized, terribly outsized or anything inside, and they should be able to, you know, get inside. And that's where Auburn thrives, is not just on the first shot, but being able to get offensive rebounds and go back up and you know, take advantage of second opportunities.
We mentioned it yesterday, though, Bill. You know, Auburn's going to see some loaded boxes, right, until they start hitting those jump shots.
Sure, like, they will. It would be crazy if they didn't.
Even if the most reliable source of offense on this team right now is probably getting paint touches to players like Keyshawn Hall and Keyshawn Murphy, you got to think that's going to be something that Auburn's opponents are game planning for. And Auburn, you know, it's like having a run game that's holding its own, and the pass game needs to improve. Defenses are going to dare you to beat them with the long ball, and that's something that I think for Auburn, you really hope you can knock a couple down, and then because then the pressure's on Vanderbilt, right? Do you keep that strategy going? If the team hits a couple early shots, do you still pack the paint and dare them to shoot over you, or do you start playing them more straight up, and then Auburn's bigs can go to work, and then Auburn's bigs have a fighting chance? But it feels like it's tough to run the ball when the other team knows you're running the ball, and it's going to be tough to go in the paint if the other team feels like they can leave some of your perimeter players open. And that's still, I mean, you're talking about Todd Pettiford and Kevin Overton, guys who have hit three-pointers consistently in their career at times. Freeman is the guy, right, who it feels like
Yeah, I'm still waiting for him to really, you know, things to really click for him. He at times, I mean, you'll see that flash and go, wow, this guy's got tremendous potential.
Yeah, Freeman's the one where, like, I feel pretty good about an open Elijah Freeman jump shot, but I also understand why it's open, right?
Yeah.
Like, teams are playing those percentages and sort of, you know, mm-hmm. daring him to heat up from there. And until he does, I feel like he's still going to be, like, he's a guy that teams feel like they can probably back off at the perimeter and dare them to, or at least say, I mean, they know what he can do off the dribble.
They'd rather have him 20 feet away from the basket,
yeah,
too.
Yes, yeah.
Because of his ability inside. That's where, if they do that, that's where Simon Walker's got to, if he has the opportunity, hit some shots yeah. tonight.
And Freeman's big enough and athletic enough to do a lot of damage closer to the basket.
Yes, he is. He's so athletic. I do
wonder if you feel like you've got some other shooters out there, like the thought of Freeman playing in the short corner or in the paint. I think that's something that could really, especially against a team that's not overwhelming size wise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Freeman could hold his own as an undersized four in this
yeah.
offense at times.
Yeah. And something else. I mean, Auburn did a great job for the first 18 minutes against Alabama. The game was played at the pace Auburn wanted. From the time when Alabama made that run at the end of the first half, and for the rest of the game, it was played at Alabama's pace. This is another one where Vandy'd rather have it up tempo. I mean, they're another team. They average 89 points a game. Auburn does not need to have to score 90 points to win the ball game tonight.
It's, you know what though, that's another reason why, yeah, just a ton of pressure on the guards, right? A ton of pressure on the guards to take care of the ball, to work for good shots, to make Vandy earn everything. Like, it's just that is another and Vandy can play inside out too, mm-hmm. right? So like the bigs can't be constantly needing help or it'll lead to open shots. But I think a lot of it is, can you stay in front of your guy? Can you run him off his spot? Can you make him, can you contest as many of these three-pointers as Vandy is going to want to shoot as possible? Because Vandy has some guys that'll shoot contested threes, but you feel a lot better about your chances with a well-contested three than you do with one where there's nobody within the county line, right, of a three-point shooter, which happened a couple times.
Too many times against Alabama. There were at least three times where there was just nobody within, you know, 8 to 10 feet of the shooter when he caught the ball, usually in the corner, and you knew that there was a really good chance, and they did. They cashed in and they hit him. Vandy's hitting 36% as a team. They have four guys shooting 36% or better right now. Auburn only has one player shooting better than 36%, and that's Keyshawn Hall from outside.
You want to get to the phones before?
Yeah.
Let's do that before, and then we can run a little bit more of that audio in the second segment if you want.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Clay is up next. Hey, Clay.
Hey, guys. Yeah, I'd called earlier, and Andy was on the line, and Drew asked me, he says, like, hey, you really – are more important than Andy, but you want to let him go. And I figured, I said, well, we'll let him go. I think he's probably got a little bit of something to do this evening.
It was really gracious.
Y'all really
gracious of you.
It was, well, I know. I mean, I'm humble.
Yeah,
I'm probably the most humble guy that you will ever meet. I'm like Moses. I mean, I'm the humblest guy that has ever lived. So, and I will tell you that over and over. But y'all, it was kind of, funny, as I was dialing the first time that I called y'all, I heard the last word I heard was Simon as the phone started ringing. And I have been wondering the last couple of weeks, and God love Blake. I mean, God love him. I mean, he's Cinderella story, you know. I mean, he earned a scholarship, the walk-on, mm-hmm. and he really tries his heart out. I think he gets some really crappy fouls called on him because they're like, nah, you're too, you know, small, you're too slow, you know, to make that defensive play. We've got to call a foul. You can't defend that well. But he is a liability when he comes on the court. There's no other way to put it. And why not put Simon in the game? Because Simon is just as big of a liability defensively, but at least, I mean, you have the possibility of him making a three-point shot. And if he were to go 3 for 6 or, you know, 3 for 7, you know, maybe he gets hot and he's got a run where he goes, you know, 4 for 7 or 4 for 6. You know, at least you're getting points out of him and you're not just giving up points on the backside.
Oh, no, I think that's absolutely – I think that's something that Steven is considering on top of the way that the guards have faded down the stretch in games that sort of indicates fatigue and overuse. Yeah, I think the thought that maybe Simon can bring something to the offense that you're not currently getting is another consideration. And I am – you know, I suspected it coming out of the game Saturday if it was at all possible. I wasn't all that shocked by the answer Steven gave. And then listening to Andy today, like it sounds like, you know, Simon's going to get a shot back in the rotation at least tonight, maybe this week.
When you see Kevin Overton at the point, expect there to be an opportunity for Simon Walker to be in the game.
Let's see what he does with it.
Well, and KO is he has looked very formidable at the point. I mean, he really has.
We'll see how much Vandy decides to try to really attack him defensively when he's running the point.
And if he faces ball pressure and if he faces double teams, there's going to be pressure on his teammates and specifically Simon to go get to his spot and get open.
Well, and y'all know, I mean, y'all are basketball people. Yeah, I mean, there's so many fans that are football fans, and they try to apply football rules to a basketball game, which does not work at all. Kevin Overton he's a basketball player. That cat is good. I mean, he really is a good basketball player. He gets himself in position. He moves around and you know, is getting late in the season, and it's crazy to say this because Keyshawn Hall is one of probably the top 10 basketball players in the country right now. But Todd Pettiford is more important to this team than Keyshawn Hall is right now. Because just imagine if Todd gets his fourth foul with 11 minutes and 48 seconds to go in a competitive ball game. What in the living world are you going to do as Auburn?
Or gets hurt.
Who are you going to put in there to run the offense?
Yeah, it's got to be KO right now. I mean, it sure. We were talking about it a little earlier, Clay. It doesn't look like you're going to see Caden Magwood.
What I think would happen in that situation, realistically, is that, yeah, I mean, Bill mentions Kevin Overton. I think Kevin Overton would be asked to do a lot of the ball handling up the floor, but they'd be trying to get the ball to Keyshawn Hall like as early and as often as possible. They'd be running the offense.
I think Sebastian Williams Adams would be bringing the ball up the court.
You're right. Yeah.
Oh my God, Bill, I would feel more comfortable for our big forward to be bringing the ball up the court and running the offense.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And this is one thing that kind of, this gives me a little bit of a concern, and this goes back to Bruce Pearl. How are we missing on these point guards? Kevin Magwood was, what, a 4-star?
Yeah.
Freshman point guard? Everybody wanted J.P. McGee. Everybody.
And, well, it's hard to say.
J.P. did not.
No, go ahead.
Get on the court. You know, it's how are we missing? It's just like our football team keeps missing on quarterbacks. How are we missing on our point guards? And I really think, you know, we're kind of playing one of our best players. Yeah, he can play point guard, but we're playing him out of position. He's a much better two-guard, dribble-drive, kick-it-out type guard than a point guard. But he's being forced to play that because we have absolutely nobody else that can run the floor.
Well, the guy that was there before,
how do you fix that, Bill?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they didn't miss on Aiden Holloway. He struggled as a freshman shooting. But, I mean, he's as Stephen and others have said, you knew that was going to come along and get better, and he's pretty darn good. So that at times, when you get somebody that is that highly touted and everybody can see that he's going to be the point guard, it's difficult to add another one at that same spot. So that's a little of it, but I understand where you're coming from.
And I don't want to make excuses, but I think it does illustrate how hard it is to evaluate at both of those positions, right? Where it's like quarterback and point guard are both spots where you have a bunch of options, and you choose the one you think's got the magic, the right stuff, and sometimes they don't.
And Dan, you just said it perfectly, because even if they are great at their position, they may not fit the way that you run offenses and do things. And so they may not fit your, deal, but they may still be great. And it's one of those things. You can have three or four forwards. You can't have four point guards. You can't have four quarterbacks. They're going to go somewhere.
Yep.
You got one and one that's sitting in the wings, and that's it. So it is a tough position to recruit and evaluate. But I mean, good gracious! I mean, we're going on a while since we had Jared Harper is the last true dynamic point guard that I can remember Auburn having.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough to hit fastballs, but you can't go 0 for 50, right? You gotta make contact at some point.
There you go, guys. Maybe we gonna get him tonight, though. I'm insufferable. I love my Tigers. We gonna 93-78.
Wow.
Final score tonight.
That would be fun.
We
that would
route
be fun.
Them.
All right, Clay.
14 threes.
Great stuff, Clay. We need to get to our first break of hour number two. Don't forget, Jake Crane going to join us in about 10 minutes, so stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron. 4-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. And guys, if you feel a little bit run down, listless, you don't want to get that pep back in your step, whatever, you need to check out Game Day Men's Health, which is here in town out on Moores Mill Road. They've got a great staff that will get with you and help come up with the best thing for you, whether it's, vitamin injections, if you need a little lose a little weight, low T, ED treatment. I mean, they can take care of that, and will really work with you and get you back, feeling the way that you want to. Game Day Men's Health, they're out on Moores Mill Road. They're open 8 to 5, during the week. Give them a call, 334-209-3706, and stop. If you're tired of being tired, you need to see Game Day Men's Health. All right, we were talking a little while ago and let you hear some of the comments, and you said that there was about to get to a point where Cody Burns, Auburn's new receivers coach, was talking about his former head coach.
Yeah, we if you caught the first hour, we talked to Andy Burcham. It was fantastic as always. And then we also had some audio from our conversations with Auburn's offensive position coaches in football earlier today. And got to have a long sit down with Cody Burns, and he talked about the receivers, the new group, including some of the freshmen that he's really excited about. But I thought he got into his answer when I asked him. I think this is when I asked him about Gus Malzahn's retirement. We'll see if that's we'll see if my suspicion is correct. But he gave a great answer when the topic of Gus Malzahn came up.
We got the news recently that Gus Malzahn has decided to retire. He was your coach for a stretch of your Auburn career. You knew about him getting back to high school, and obviously he had a big impact on your career. Just your memories of coach and how you sort of received the news that he decided to step down.
Man, really mentor to me. Everything that he meant throughout the course of my life, as a player, as a coach, give me that opportunity and really what he's meant to Auburn, right? Like when I talk to Coach, he talks about Auburn like we, like, man, I want us to get back. Like, what do we got to do to continue to, you know, grow and get better? And so, man, just the most respect for who he is as a person, Miss Christie, his daughters, what they meant in my life is big, and really, like, all he's wanted to do was help his former players in any way that played here for him. And that's the man he is that when you call him, it's all about connections, it's all about, you know, the relationships. And that's what he is. He's a relationship-based person. He's authentic, he's genuine. And again, Auburn is a tough job, yet it's the best job in the country. And for him to be able to do what he did here while he was here, I thought spoke highly of who he is as a coach and who he is as a person. And I respect him for his time here. And again, this dates back from me being in high school, growing up as a young kid in the state of Arkansas, seeing that this guy, Coach Malzahn, this offensive genius, that, man, I just want to have a chance to play for him. And it just so works out that I'm coming out of high school, he's at Arkansas, I choose to go to Auburn, and then 2 years later he shows up and he's my coach. And then 2 years later we win a national championship, and then 3 years later we go back to a national championship, and then 4 years later we go to an SEC championship, right? So however you view him, he's done a lot for Auburn, and I respect him and truly love him as a person and a coach as well. He has that it factor about him. There's some people that when they walk in the room, you see it and you know it. And he's one of those guys, right? And my short time that I had at the University of Tennessee, me and Coach Golis were really like this really quick because we're like-minded. We see the game in the same sense. And there's a mutual respect that if I see something that's wrong, I'm going to tell him. If he sees something that's wrong, he's going to tell me. And so there's a really good respect, and it's also a really good work environment between the two of us. And so, again, we're just on the same page when it comes to football. He's a phenomenal person. He's really, again, relationship-based. He's all about kids and developing kids. And ultimately, like, an incredible coach, one of the best offensive minds I've been around.
Cody Burns, as he met with the media, primarily that was Dan and Jason there. We have more audio from Auburn football assistants, but right now we need to get to our bottom of the hour break, and we'll check in with Jake Crane on the other side here on the Tuesday Drive.
ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. As the sun finally going down, it's great to say that at after 5:30 here on this February the 10th. Bill and Dan here in the studio with Drew at the controls. We're going to head to the drive hotline. Welcome in our good friend from Crane and Cone. That is Jake Crane. Jake, how you doing today?
Oh, guys, I'm doing fantastic. I appreciate y'all letting me back on, and a big one for Auburn basketball tonight. I don't mean to jump the segment.
Oh, no, no question.
One tonight.
Yeah, this is, I mean, we were talking about Saturday being a must win. Well, they didn't. This one is, an absolute must after that loss and falling back to 5-5 and losing their second home game.
Yeah, and again, you look here, you're sitting on 14 wins as well, which isn't a ton. Mm-hmm. Now, they're still safe to make the NCAA tournament, but with a game on the road looming at Arkansas, and you look at the rest of this schedule, you can't continue to lose home games. And, you know, the worst part about it is you played so well, I thought, defensively for the first 17 minutes of the first half. Auburn just, and Coach Pearls talked about this, they don't have a lot of maturity at the guard position on defense. That's the problem. That they don't, you know, Sebastian Williams-Adams is out there trying to do everything he can on defense. Jovic is doing the same thing. I think Keyshawn Murphy has really been guarding well, including on the perimeter. But if you're a guard at Auburn, at some point you have to play on both ends of the court. Tahad had a great night offensively, but, I mean, he had about as many busts defensively as a guy can have in important moments at the end of the first half and then the second half. It's just the defensive immaturity of some guys on this team continues to cost them. And you gave up 60 points in the second half. You deserve to lose.
70 points in the last 22 minutes and 4 seconds. That is
unacceptable.
That's absolutely. That's a pace of almost 125 a game. And Stephen Pearl said after the game, my best players need to play better defense.
Yeah, and I don't know how, again, when you're this far into the season, as a player, you haven't figured that out. I think, and you look at what Stephen was left with, and I'm not trying to make excuses here, but you lose that many guys. You know, as crazy as Chad Baker was, that Auburn team was pretty mature everywhere else. It just seems like they're not getting the message at certain spots, and it's going to cost you games. It's going to cost you valuable games, and that's what happened. But at the end of the day, you're still in this. You beat Vanderbilt. You look at the quad one. You're still going to be looking good in the quad one, and so you're not out of it by any stretch of the imagination. But at some point, you got to look yourself in the mirror and ask what type of man you are, and some of the guys on Auburn's basketball team haven't done that.
How surprised would you be to see Stephen Pearl tinker with the rotation? I keep wondering. I don't disagree with too much of what you just said, Jake. I do keep wondering if the performance in the second half with some of the guards is related to fatigue. I mean, Phil Jackson says all the time, defense is conditioning. And the longer, the more you ask Tahad or Kevin Overton to play, I think the tougher it's going to be for those guys to give you the defense you want 8-10 minutes of these games, and adding someone else to the rotation. We're hearing more about Simon Walker these last couple of days. Stealing some minutes for someone like him, I wonder if that could give you a better Tahad and a better Kevin Overton at the end of some of these games. And you're going to need it, because I suspect Auburn's not done playing close games and games that come down to the last few possessions in the final few minutes.
Nothing would surprise me. I just wonder the capability. You know, you can try as hard as you want. My washing machine tries hard, but it can't go out there and guard, you know, the Tanner kid tonight for Vanderbilt. If you don't have the capability to do it, you know, you're putting a guy in a bad spot. Now, again, they might. We'll see. But here's my problem. When I look at Auburn defensively, and look, I understand the physical affects the mental. That's a very true thing. But a lot of the problems defensively were mental. They were mental mistakes. I mean, Steven even talked about it in the post game. Like, I'm sitting there in the huddle telling you what they're about to do. Not only that, I'm telling you what they're about to do and what you need to do when they do it. And then you don't do that for three possessions in a row. To me, that's mental laziness. That's complacency. That's checking out. But yeah, I mean, again, you're running up and down the court. But to be honest with you, Dan, if you want to sit here and talk about guys playing defense, balls to the wall for the whole game when there's not a huge rotation, go watch Houston play. Like I've always said, if I want excuses, you know, there's plenty of people I can go talk to.
Well, as you said, I mean, look, it's big for Auburn. Vandy, they're still smarting. I mean, what a shocking loss that was.
Yeah.
On Saturday, a game where it looked like they were going to get blown. They were getting blown out, and nearly came all the way back from a 21-point deficit in the final few minutes to just lose by one.
Well, if you played three halves, Vandy would have probably covered. It's just, but you don't. You play two, and if you know, I watched that whole game. Oklahoma came out and punched them right in the face early. I mean, they jumped on him. I think it was 16-3. And Oklahoma, look, they've got good players. You look at who's playing for Oklahoma. I mean, they got Nigel Pack. They got Brown. They got some guys that can do some things. They just haven't been able to put it together. That's why this league is so dangerous, that there are no nights off. And, you know, Bruce Pearl talked about this a couple years ago. It used to be in the SEC, and Auburn used to be one of them. You really only had to get up for a certain amount of games during the conference season at home or on the road. But the way it is now, if you sleepwalk into a game, you can get embarrassed, and gravity returned at the end. But they had dug themselves such a big hole, and kudos to Oklahoma and Porter Moser, that they weren't able to come back. But I tell you what, I don't think they're going to make that mistake again. It's probably the worst thing that could have happened before they played the team you're rooting for. I wish they would have won by 40.
Yeah, Vandy is a team. You know, I think they're susceptible to hot stretches and cold stretches more than
your
average.
Not big, Dan. They're not big.
They're
very small.
And they're so reliant on the jump shot, right? That it's like that's a team that when you're hitting and you know they're comfortable shooting a lot of jump shots, but they're going to have games like Oklahoma where the shots aren't going in, and if you can take advantage of that, you got a great shot of beating them, even if you're a team like Oklahoma riding a 9-game losing streak going into that game in Nashville. You know, it's I guess how difficult can you make the Vanderbilt jump shots? And then for Vanderbilt, I feel like they're going to try to make Auburn hit some of those jump shots too.
Without a doubt, I expect Jovich to be able to get in there and you know really battle and do some things. I will say this, with Auburn's luck, at least the way it's felt, Vandy will come and shoot 70% from three. There are times Bama could have gone down the court blindfolded and made the shot. It's just for some reason that seems to happen to Auburn more than other ones. I will say this. You got to stop Tyler Nickel.
Oh, yeah.
Stop Tyler Nickel.
Yeah, he shoots 45% three.
I think he's the best shooter in the league, to be honest with you. If he sees it, if he can see the basket, there's a good chance it's going in. You got to rough him up. You got to make him drive. You actually got to play exactly like you played for the first 17 minutes of the first half against Vanderbilt. So the scouting report is going to be probably closer to Alabama than most teams you're going to play. But we always say the teams that win the most ways. With Vanderbilt, they don't have a ton of ways they can beat you, but you cannot let them get comfortable. You cannot go under screens. You've got to make sure the right guys are taking the right shot for you defensively. And if Vandy's going to beat you, beat us with mid-ranges and drive into the basket.
It's got to be so tough for a player like Tahad because he's got the full range of offensive skills, but he really, you know, he wants that jump shot to go in. He wants to start being more of a consistent weapon from the outside. And, you know, fighting that battle to keep your teammates involved and drive to the basket and do everything you need to do as an offensive player, while also, you know, that temptation to try to force it with the jump shot and try to heat up from the outside. Like he's battling. I just, you know, it makes him very difficult to predict as far as what you're going to get game to game. Yeah. And you just sort of hope you hope he remembers that he's got the full set of skills in the toolbox.
For sure. And look, it's just like anything in life. You've got to take what's the best option, what's in front of you. I can't make my mind up before a pitch in baseball. I'm going to swing at this pitch regardless. If I'm a quarterback, I can't make my mind up where I'm going to throw the ball before I get into my progression. It's the same thing with basketball. I can't make my mind up what I'm going to do before I see how the defense is playing me. And Tahad's blessed enough where he always has an out. You know, if they give him the drive, he can drive. If they give him the shot, he can make that shot. If they double him, he's a very willing and talented passer. You just can't go try and force the action. It's like when I get in an argument with my wife, I can't just say anything. I've got to play, give what the defense has given me. You know what I'm saying? I got to make the best decision on what to say next. So as long as Tahad doesn't go down there and force it, runs the offense, when he gets his opportunity, takes the best decision possible with what's in front of him, he'll be just fine. But it's when you start forcing it that it becomes an even bigger problem and can take your team out of rhythm.
Yeah, it was great to see Tahad get back on track offensively in that ball game in which Charles Bediako was definitely a factor. Jake, definitely, I wanted to get your thoughts on Judge Pruitt's decision. Just coincidentally for Alabama, it worked out that Charles did get to play that last ball game this past Saturday.
All right, so what do we got to do to get a judge in Auburn to get Janai back here for the next 2 weeks? Can we rent a player? Can we rent a good big to come down here? I mean, Dylan Cardwell,
I think they're saving it. Hey, Jake, I think they're saving it for the tournament. I think that's the thinking is maybe you wait.
That's brilliant. That's maybe, what I do.
Wait until Selection Sunday.
Like Globo Jim walking out there in the first round by the time I got done with it. I just, like I said last time, you know, Nate Oates is a really good coach. You can hate Alabama and understand that he's a really good basketball coach. He's a really competitive guy. And I know that there's European players that are playing. you know, we can sit here and have the argument that just ban everybody that signs a pro contract. No. I'd be fine with that. I don't care if it's Serbia or the G League. But to act like where Jovic played and where Bediako played and the way that went down, because Jovic, they don't have – Jovic can't go play at Serbia A&M for 4 years and then go pro. That's not the way it works. Like, you have to go pro and you don't have a chance to have college eligibility. Well, Bediako played in college, decided to go pro. I'm just shocked Nate did this. I just thought he had more competitive character than that. Deep down, he knows. But, hey, everybody's like, oh, well, they only went 3-2 with him. Imagine if they didn't have him. They may have gone 1-4.
Mm-hmm. You know how toothless your case has to be to lose to the NCAA in court?
They're
getting better. Their percentage, their batting average is improving.
Yeah.
As they go to a bat more.
Yeah, Bill. Let me ask you this though, because this is something we were talking about around the office today. We may talk about it on the show eventually. You know, in college football, the NCAA really can't do anything with the postseason, right? Like they
right.
really deep down
oh, absolutely.
Don't own it. In basketball, they do.
They
though.
Do.
If you look at that logo, what does it say? Says NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament. So they decide, and the committee's already come out and said they're going to judge Alabama based on the way their roster has fluctuated. So I'm just telling you, I would not be shocked at all if there's no vacation of wins, but they may have a vacation from the tournament.
Yeah, so Charlie Baker was talking about this last week before you had the ruling, and his position, and you don't have an official NCAA position about this, and you don't know exactly what the committee's going to do. Sounds like Charlie Baker's position right now is, as long as you have the backing of a court order or a judge, the NCAA is not going to punish you for playing a player that a judge has ruled eligible. But if the NCAA, now that they've won in court, if Alabama were to keep trying to play Bediako, right, if they were to thumb their nose at the NCAA to the degree where it's like, now you've lost in court and you're still going to try to play this guy, that would be a different story. But I don't know if they want to set the precedent of, at least briefly seeming like a sore loser because you didn't get the result you wanted in court and you still want to be able to enforce your rules despite. So I think I would be, and look, and maybe it's because it's Alabama, nobody else, right? There's probably some of that.
Maybe, although I was more than a little surprised to see Bucky come out and complain about other teams not having to face that full Alabama roster and them losing and what they're going to do about it.
He's just trying to get Nate to still play him so they could not go to the tournament. What if
he's just trying to get Nate out of there so he can go ahead and get the job.
But Jake, you raise a fascinating point.
He's an elephant if he could afford it.
You're right about that.
Now,
yeah, what the committee could do if Alabama's a genuine bubble team, I think is fascinating.
Watch SMU get in over them in basketball this time. No, I'm telling you though, I'll say this, and anybody that's ever followed the NCAA knows this. They're a vindictive group of people, and they've done nothing but gotten punched in the face over and over and over and over in court. I wouldn't put anything past them. And at the end of the day, fellas, you know, that committee chooses who that committee chooses.
That's true.
You know what? Even if they were to not pick Alabama, what's Bama going to – you think a judge is going to be able to get you in the NCAA tournament? I'm just telling you, I wouldn't put anything past them.
Yeah, well, if they don't do that, then just watch the seeding. And then, of course, what the NCAA will do is they're gonna flame Ole Miss football. You know that's coming.
No, so with the NCAA tournament, I mean, you could try to sue because you felt like you were wrongfully excluded, even if you won.
What are you gonna do if you're in the worst bracket with a terrible seeding?
Well, you can't
sue that.
I think even if you won, you know, in court, I don't think it would get you in the tournament. It would get you monetary damages.
Right. Like you can want to come hang out in my house, but it's my house. You can't sue me for coming to my house.
Sure, and any
for not inviting you. That's
even
right.
Even if they could prove some sort of conspiracy, I don't think you're going to get into the tournament. It would just be sort of a monetary deal. And I think you're right, Jake. Just like Jonah said in Superbad, people don't forget, right? The NCAAs.
No, it's like that time you peed your pants in second grade, man. People don't forget.
Speak for yourself.
Great. Hey, Jake,
Bill, that's from the movie.
That's
I know. Yeah, I know. That
can't be
okay,
it.
Okay.
Hey, Jake.
If that's not, I'm going to call. I'm going to get a hold of Matt and tell him you're not watching the right stuff.
All right. Hey, Jake, make sure.
Definitely have seen it.
Make sure. Tell folks how they can find your work.
Yeah, man, really easy. I actually just did college football's hardest schedule for 2026. And unfortunately, friends, Auburn's on
there.
They're pretty high up. Just go to YouTube.
What else is new?
Crain and Cone, and check us out.
Great stuff, Jake, man. We always appreciate it. Have a great week.
Appreciate it, guys. You'll be good.
Jake Crain joining us as he does on Tuesday. He's got to get to our final break of the afternoon. Back to wrap it up here on the Tuesday Drive.
At 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Final minute or so here on the Tuesday Drive Fun Show as we thank Jake Crain for joining us this hour. Andy Burcham, who's already on with the pregame getting ready for the opening tip of Auburn and Vandy. And you can flip over to Wings 94.3 to catch all the play-by-play action of Auburn and Vandy. It is time for us to say goodbye, though, as the music is playing. We'll be back tomorrow. Look back at tonight's game and anything else that goes on between now and then in the world of sports.
Busy hour number one tomorrow, to say the least. We'll be talking about tonight's game. We'll be talking about football. We'll be previewing baseball.
Yeah, that is right.
With our buddy Jason tomorrow.
Yeah, so looking forward to that. But that's going to wrap things up for the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.